are building a path for the peace paradigm. King and Gandhi, many more, have discovered something core. Now we're building a path for the peace paradigm. Every challenge is another highway sign.
This is Peace Paradigm Radio. I'm your host, Stephanie Van Hook. I'm here in the studio with my co-host, Michael Nagler. And Peace Paradigm Radio explores the power of active nonviolence. And what could be more active in nonviolence than replacing war altogether and really getting into the places where maybe we're not paying attention to war support and uprooting it and replacing it with another idea. And that's exactly what's happening in the world this very week. There was a conference at the Vatican, and it was headed up by a group called Pax Christi International. And the conference was called Nonviolence and Just Peace, Contributing to the Catholic Understanding of and Commitment to Nonviolence. And what's really interesting about this conference is that they wanted to challenge the doctrine of just war. So we want to talk today on our show about what is, first of all, the history of just war theory, and then what that has to do with the just war doctrine within the Catholic Church. And we want to tell you a little bit about how this conference decided, you know, what kind of statement they came out with in support of nonviolence and who was there and so forth. So that's where we're going to go today in our show, and we look forward to having you with us on this journey, which will be very interesting, I think. Looking forward to it. So let's jump into the conversation with Michael. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, Stephanie. Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's get into the idea of the beginning of just war theory. Now, this idea is essentially a way of saying that sometimes war is necessary. Sometimes we have to engage in violent behavior because the lives of others need it. Now, let's go into the history of that idea in terms of how it's becoming entrenched into our moral understanding of the world and where it places that it finds itself, like in Catholic social teachings, which is it might be a strange place to find it, maybe not. Because, well, let's start. Is nonviolence, what's the difference between nonviolence and pacifism? Is there ever room for violence when we are within the framework of nonviolence, or is violence rejected altogether? Let's start there. So, Michael, when you want to start us off?
I'd be happy to, Stephanie. Yeah, this may seem like a bit of a tricky argument, but I think that violence, when properly understood, is never necessary. Abusive force may be. I hope you see the distinction there. So let's say that a person is bursting into a public arena with an assault rifle, something that is not unthinkable anymore, and you have an opportunity to stop that person from massacring others, but you can only do so by taking him out, quote unquote, you know, by shooting him. Now, Gandhi would this was called in Gandhi's thinking the madman with the sword analogy, and he argued that if you could do this without anger, you know, without excessive hatred and fear, if you could do this without unwillingness to face the consequences that might befall you, and most importantly, if you didn't think that you had found a solution to violence, but instead thought, where did we go wrong? Where did this society so fall apart that people were willing to do this to one another? So in other words, you could never use the madman with the sword analogy to prepare for violence, because Gandhi said, this is only in an extreme emergency. If you have time to prepare, prepare nonviolence.
Right. And so let's circle back to that idea, the idea of the madman with the sword, as we work our way into what is the just war theory and then just war doctrine. So maybe our audience would first like to have a bit of a definition, a working definition of what nonviolence is and how it is, where it falls on the spectrum between total pacifism and violence. Would you like to start us with that?
Wouldn't mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the way we look at nonviolence at META is the way Gandhi did, which is as a living force. So it's not a doctrinal question, really. And there's a shade, an important shade of difference between Gandhi's approach and the present just war approach, in that his approach was not really based on morality, but entirely on what works. And for him, there was no ultimate difference between the effective thing to do and the right thing to do. So nonviolence is a positive force which you can engage to, among other things, creatively resolve a conflict that you're faced with. And I think that force comes from your own conversion. I'm thinking very much within the individual, the conversion of anger and fear. Mm-hmm. And the refusal to act on anger and fear. And the energy that's then released turns into a creative force.
So let's talk about that for a second, because it doesn't mean not doing anything at all then, meaning I'm not going to act on anger and fear, so I'm not going to act at all. Rather, I'm not going to let anger and fear dictate the way that I express how I'd like to transform a situation. I'm going to harness that for different creative solutions that don't harm others, but actually benefit them and benefit myself in that process.
Perfect. Yes, that's exactly what it means. You're not going to let the anger, let's stick with anger just for simplicity. You're not going to let the anger drive you into action. But you're not going to deny it. You're certainly not going to be paralyzed and passive. Mm-hmm. And pacifism, as I understand it, means mostly the refusal to engage in war under any circumstances. Nonviolence is kind of grounded in a different idea, the idea that you can convert anger and fear to a positive drive. And by the way, there's lots of good evidence for that now that science has turned its attention to that.
Like what?
Well, I like to think all the way back to 1952 when there was a school experiment carried out by a man named Joel Davitz, where there were two groups of students. One was given cooperation training and the other was not. Then both groups were brought together in an auditorium and subjected to an extremely frustrating experience. You could do more to people in those days than you can today in the name of science. Both groups of kids were then sent back to their classrooms with psychologists watching carefully through one-way glass to see what happens. So the hypothesis or the question that they were addressing is, how long is it going to take for the cooperation training to wear thin and break down under the impulse of this frustration? What they discovered was absolutely amazing. The kids who hadn't had cooperation training, of course, they were hell on wheels. It was difficult to control them. The frustration had driven them up the wall. Here's the amazing part. The children who had cooperation training were super cooperative. In other words, they had dug this positive, creative channel, cooperation and mutual support, and the frustration energy went into that channel because they had prepared it. So it's as though you have just raw, nondescript energy to deal with here, and you're making a human choice, partly based on your conditioning, your past experiences, as to how that energy is going to be expressed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I have a quote here from Gandhi, you know, along those lines, who also says, a person is not to return violence by violence, but to neutralize it by withholding one's hand and at the same time refusing to submit to the demand. So again, like rechanneling, redirecting a certain kind of energy, and that there is science behind that. Mm-hmm. Now, what does this have to do let's turn now to the just war theory. Let's start with that. The history of that, people generally attribute that to Saint Augustine. So why don't you give us a bit of a background on that as a somebody who's a great Augustinian in his heart. You translated a passage that you use for meditation that's in God Makes the Rivers to Flow, a book by Ignatius Schwerin of World's Passages, a very beautiful translation of from St. Augustine. So why would somebody who is considered a saint be also very much in favor of the justification of war? So can you talk about just war theory and how it originated with St. Augustine?
Yeah, I guess at last my classical education is coming in for some kind of handy use. I wouldn't say he was very much in favor. He begrudgingly accepted it, and he accepted it as a temporary condition of fallen humanity that we were going to eventually evolve out of as individuals or as a society. So you may be aware that the roughly first three centuries of Christianity, you could not be a soldier if you were a Christian. And around 225 AD, there was a young man in North Africa named Martinianus. They tried to draft him, and he made this famous declaration, Christianus sum non possum malum facere. I'm a Christian, I cannot do evil. And he was executed. So he became the first martyr for conscientious objection that's known in the West. Now, with what's called the donation of Constantine, when Emperor Constantine, long story short, makes Christianity the state religion, now that it is the ideology behind the state, it can no longer refuse war. Remember that war in the ancient world was fought almost entirely between combatants who would meet in empty fields between established, settled units. So there was practically zero direct collateral damage to civilians, a number which has now climbed up to 95%. There was no such thing as a bomb.
Wait, you're saying that 95% of those wounded in war are now civilians.
Right. Okay. Wounded or killed.
Okay.
This is since the Korean War.
95%. Okay. 95%. That's a good number to know.
Yeah. Yep. That's a horrible, huge statistic, but it is absolutely true. Now, there were circumstances in the ancient world where you destroyed an entire city and, you know, and left no stone unturned and put men, women, and children to the sword. That's what they did. The Romans themselves did this to the city of Carthage, for example, in North Africa. But the big switch comes between about 310 and 325, where before that milestone, you could not be in the legions if you were a Christian. Interestingly enough, though, their argument was not that war is immoral or evil, or that Jesus would be against it, but rather that in order to join a legion, you had to swear allegiance to, you had basically had to swear that the emperor was God, and a Christian couldn't do that. So, but after Christianity becomes a state religion, now a Christian has to join by a part of his religious obligation, and it's only his. And you have stories like the thunderstruck 12th Legion, duodecim legio fulminata, where you know the whole encampment was struck by lightning, and they weren't hurt because they had just converted to Christianity. In other words, they created a whole mythology to justify this fact.
Okay, I think that's going to be an interesting word. You know, a mythology to justify.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And now there's a wonderful book by a man named Jeffrey Nuttall, Nuttall, called Christian Pacifism in History. And he will spell out very carefully with good historical research how there have been five waves of rediscovery of what they call gospel literalism and its pacifistic stance throughout history coming down to the modern period. The most recent that Nuttall looked at was George Fox and Quakerism. And can I share a little aha experience I had this morning thinking about our program?
Sure. For those of you just tuning in, this is Peace Paradigm Radio, and we are exploring the topic of just war theory and the just war doctrine, because there was a recent meeting at the Vatican led by Pax Christi International called Nonviolence and Just Peace, which we'll get into. What is this idea of just peace? Contributing to the Catholic understanding of and commitment to nonviolence. So there are activists who are trying to shape new policy within the Catholic Church to reject the justification of war that has been done through what is known as just war doctrine, which has its roots in just war theory. So Michael Nagler, who is author of The Nonviolence Handbook and Search for Nonviolent Future and president of the Meta Center for Nonviolence, also happens to be my co-host and my news anchor on Peace Paradigm Radio. And he was just about to tell us his aha moment.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
So to back up just a second, Augustine did argue that under present conditions, it's not possible not to have war. So you had to go into it, though, with regret, and it had to be a temporary situation. So he's kind of lining up with Gandhi's A Madman with the Sword. Then about, 1,200 years later, the Renaissance jurists, particularly Hugo Grotius, formulated what is called the jus ad bellum and the jus in bello.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're getting into
that.
So justice in, to go to war,
right,
and versus justice within,
right,
accepting that we are going to war. Now, how do we act?
How do we act in war?
Okay. Yeah.
And then coming down a bit, in 1983, the U.S. Catholic bishops, followed quickly by German and French Catholic bishops, issued a beautiful proclamation called God's Challenge and Our Response, in which they, for the first time, raised this question. They didn't say, is just war wrong? They said, does it apply under modern circumstances?
Yes.
So, for example, within just war, you had one of the criteria was proportionality. Now, if you drop an atomic bomb on a city, there's no question that this was a disproportionate response.
Right.
So, here's my big breakthrough this morning. So we have drum roll, please, maestro. We have a Nuttall saying that there have been five waves of the recovery, the rediscovery of gospel pacifism. And I think this is the sixth. And I think we can make this one stick.
Say more about what you mean by the waves and what you think this wave actually is. How do you define this wave?
So previous waves have been the property of very dissident outlying groups, and like the Mennonites and the Brethren. And they have pulled out of society primarily because they could not accept war. And they were, after a while, in some cases, allowed to live on the fringes of society. My brother-in-law, Rick, who was in the Peace Corps in Paraguay, remembers going in a boat up the river and coming to a dock, and suddenly in the middle of the jungle, there's all these people dressed in black from head to toe, and they were Mennonites, and they were living in what's called an enclaved community. But on the other hand, they were often persecuted horrendously. And they never succeeded in getting their doctrine into the mainstream. But I think things could be different now. I think that, first of all, this war is more horrific. Mm-hmm. Its connection with many social problems is better understood. And you have a much – here's the really important part. You have a much more sophisticated growth in the awareness of nonviolence. And, you know, we are constructive program people here at Meta. We believe that if you can cause nonviolence to grow, then various forms of violence will be very much weakened, and you'll be able to dislodge them by satyagraha, by creative nonviolence. So this, you have a pope, a Catholic pope, calling a conference on nonviolence and the reconsideration of just war. This is new.
Now, did he call – he didn't call the conference, did he? I think Pax Christi called it, and he supported it, right? It wasn't a –
that's more
– a little different.
Technically, that's correct. It is a little different. But remember that Pax Christi is kind of an official peace and justice arm, and that they the Pope delegated an important cardinal to this conference who is has an office in the pontificate in the Vatican on peace and justice, and that he performed a mass. By the way, we were getting up to the minute reports from our friends, several of whom were at that conference and some of whom can join us in a couple of weeks on our next program to give us insider information. But the Pope Francis also wrote a very strong letter supporting the work of this meeting.
Right. I have just a line of it here from the document that they came out of the 3-day conference with. It said, you know, from Pope Francis, that your thoughts on revitalizing the tools of nonviolence and of active nonviolence in particular will be needed and a positive contribution. So that is very amazing that you have somebody in a position of authority, of worldly authority in that way, that understands the terms nonviolence and is behind it. Yeah, that's that's interesting. So, but before, now I think we've skipped over for a lot of our listeners, what is just war theory and what is the just war doctrine? I think we're making an assumption here. So why don't we step back again, and could you please tell us before our break, what is just war theory versus just war doctrine? So just war theory is what?
Stephanie, I'm not sure I'm terribly clear on that distinction.
Okay. So the what is just war theory?
Just war doctrine, if I may. and we can look back at that later and see what the difference between the theory and the doctrine is. But the just war doctrine, I think, is what I'm describing, says that there are basically at least four criteria which justify entering into and conduct during war.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually just war theory, Michael.
Okay.
So you're talking about just war theory, and that's the one that's really evolved from evolved from Augustine to Aquinas to the others that you're mentioning, which have these rules of proportionality, of this has to be a war that we're getting into in order to stop greater harm.
Right.
This is not a war that we are on the offensive, but it has to be defensive, so forth. These are the kinds of criteria that like war is a horrible thing, and if we are to participate in it, it has to be for all of these really good reasons that don't make us the aggressor, but make us the good guys.
Yeah.
And now what the just war doctrine is that I understood of it is that it was it came out of Catholic teachings that they ended up, I think, in 1992 inserting into the Catholic teachings, which says that there are times when, as Catholics, there we can support a war. And it came out also of discussion, especially around World War II. So then we have these, let's talk about that. There's people think that the world wars are these good wars.
Yeah.
But we know in nonviolence that there were people who were conscientious objectors to the world wars as well.
Yeah,
you know,
sure
they call
were.
Them the good. There's a film out there called The Good War and Those Who Refused to Fight It. That people can learn about who those people were and why they what they went through resisting, engaging based on their spiritual belief system, even why they wouldn't say that they wouldn't justify that kind of engagement with violence, even if they're being told through much propaganda. Which propaganda was really that of the world wars, you know, belonged to them in a way that the growth of it and how the experiment and how to rally people around this kind of a research after power in the world using the force of arms. And now who doesn't, the second thing I want to say is who doesn't feel that war has a justification besides the pacifist, but anybody, anywhere who's going to say they're going to be in a war is going to try to argue that the reason they're engaging in that war is just.
Yeah. And it's interesting to note that when that reason wears thin and it's difficult to convince yourself and others of that reason, people get quite sick who are involved in a war. They get mentally ill. They commit suicide. And I think there's a progress going on here in our understanding of what violence is. when I was still a professor at Berkeley, the political science department had a conference on war, and they asked us, do you think war is justified? And I gave a very startling answer. Seemed like it was my role to shock people that whole time at that institution. And instead of saying yes or no, it is just or it isn't just, I said, not anymore. That war has increased in virulence and humanity has increased in understanding, slowly but surely, almost invisibly. And we've reached a point where this thing cannot be tolerated anymore.
So, you know, scientifically, psychologically, mm-hmm. spiritually, morally, yeah. the evidence in our consciousness keeps growing
yeah.
to show that when I harm another, mm-hmm. even if I think it's for a good reason, mm-hmm. I harm myself. So if I hold on to that justification of having harmed them for my own good, I really am playing with fire and
yeah.
a mythology, again, about yeah. who I am.
Good, well put. And that mythology, as I say, is getting thinner and thinner.
Mm-hmm.
There's an episode recently where Joan Baez was going to give a concert in Idaho, and there was a small bunch of Vietnam vets outside who were protesting her and saying Joan Baez said that we kill babies and she aided and abetted harm to American soldiers. And now Joni is a lot like Mahatma Gandhi in a way. She was told, don't go out there. There's people there who are objecting to you. And she went out immediately,
mm-hmm.
engaged those people in conversation, completely won them over. And at the end of which they said, could you sign our posters? She
mm-hmm.
said, take my name off it and I'll sign it. But this is a good example of how the justification for war is wearing thin.
Mm-hmm.
And the only people who really cling to it now are people who feel that they cannot afford to let go of that excuse, that suddenly they'll be revealed as an immoral person. And it's very hard for a person to take that.
And also part of the growing consciousness, which was addressed by this conference at
right.
the Vatican, was that there are alternatives and that it's really hard to talk about war and violence if we're not promoting what you can do instead in situations that are really tough, like Syria. Right.
Yeah.
Before we get into that more, it's also important to note that when just war theory was part of it was evolving and changing and shifting, and they were saying, well, it's no longer relevant today. That idea, let's go back to the idea of proportionality, because as that relates to what you were saying earlier about Gandhi, a madman with the sword, if somebody were to come into, you know, your place of work or your home, for goodness sake, we don't want that to happen, you would do everything you could to stop that person. Mm-hmm. But that's not using a drone. That's hand to hand. That's, mm-hmm. you know, you see the person in front of you and you're stopping them with your own body. And that's the way that they, you know, St. Augustine or Thomas Aquinas, they weren't talking about flying planes and dropping bombs on, you know,
yeah.
vague targets.
Yeah.
So that's, if our warfare is no longer mm-hmm. that sort of hand to hand expression mm-hmm. either, then that also seems to take away the relevance of a discussion about
yep.
what war can actually
yep.
do, because you don't get to see the actual result of it.
Yeah.
Sanitized.
When I was a CEO and we're friends and we're always sitting around in coffee shops talking about what to say, we came up with a very good argument that one of my friends actually used, which was, you know, the draft boards would always say, what if somebody came to rape your grandmother? And we,
which meant some of our listeners might be saying right now.
Yeah.
So we're going to answer that. Go
ahead. What we said was, I'm not sure what I would do, but I'm sure what I would not do, which is to go and attack his grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Peace Paradigm Radio with Stephanie Van Hook and Michael Nagler. We're talking about just war theory, just war doctrine in a conference that just recently took place at the Vatican. And we hope that you stay tuned for the next part of the show where we're going to get into another aspect, another element of this, and tell you a little bit about some of the conclusions that they came out from the conference with. This is Stephanie Van Hook, host of Peace Paradigm Radio, and we're back. We want to talk more about this just war, just peace idea, because the Vatican recently held a conference in Rome from April 11th to 13th, 2016, called Nonviolence and Just Peace, Contributing to the Catholic Understanding of and Commitment to Nonviolence. And we're very excited about this idea. And from the document that they came out with at the end of the conference, it's available online. You can look it up at the website of Pax Christi, or just put in, type in your favorite search engine, Nonviolence Conference at Vatican Final Document. The actual document is entitled An Appeal to the Catholic Church to Recommit to the Centrality of Gospel Nonviolence. It's a really radical title, and Pope Francis had said in it, and quoting in this document, that your thoughts on revitalizing the tools of nonviolence and of active nonviolence in particular will be a needed and positive contribution. So is he saying, you know, help us do this, please, you know, create a movement and make us do it. And they point out that recent academic research has confirmed that nonviolent resistance strategies are twice as effective as violent ones, including Maria Stephan, who wrote a book with Erica Chenoweth about transitions to democracy all over the world. It's one of the most celebrated political science books out there, because it actually confirms, they say it proves Gandhi right, where it actually provides quantitative research about the active power of nonviolent struggle. And that's called Why Civil Resistance Works. And this is what their mission. They said that the time has come for our church to be a living witness and to invest far greater human and financial resources in promoting a spirituality and practice of active nonviolence, and informing and training our Catholic communities in effective nonviolent practices. In all of this, Jesus is our inspiration and model. And some of the conclusions that they came out with, because they said that the message of Jesus should never be used to justify violence, injustice, or war. And so, again, this idea of the rise of a religion based around a very difficult, very challenging message, like something like this active nonviolence that Jesus was behind, you know, throughout time ends up, you know, becoming, people start to accommodate some of the ideas. This is Michael Nagler's theory, who's nodding his head in the studio next to me. I'm glad I'm saying it. It goes through a stage of accommodation till it finally becomes co-opted and turned around entirely. So you take somebody who's nonviolent and say that they would be in favor of violence. So they say that we believe that there is no just war. And they say too often the just war theory has been used to endorse rather than to prevent or limit war, suggesting that a, quote, just war is possible, undermines the moral imperative to develop the tools and capacities for nonviolent transformation of conflict. And they say we need a new framework that is consistent with the gospel of nonviolence, and that a different path is clearly unfolding, and that anybody who's been following Peace Paradigm Radio is aware of this. And you don't have to be a Catholic to be behind one of the largest religious organizations and institutions in the world saying, making this, working on this very radical shift. So it's very exciting. And they say, we want to shift to a framework called a just peace. And a just peace approach offers a vision and an ethic to build peace, as well as to prevent, diffuse, and to heal the damage of violent conflict. This ethic includes a commitment to human dignity and thriving relationships, with specific criteria, virtues, and practices to guide our actions, and that we recognize that peace requires justice, and justice requires peacemaking. So this is a very exciting time when all of these things that I just read can actually be confirmed through research and study and science and practice. So these tools exist, and they want to spread them. Michael.
Stephanie, that's great. I would like to expand a little bit on one of those tools, and it's something that we've often mentioned here. One of our friends who was at that conference was Mel Duncan, and he'll be probably talking to us in a couple of weeks. Now, he, in his own statement, which is part of the press conference that they released, he said, we want to promote nonviolent practices and strategies, parenthesis, e.g., nonviolent resistance, restorative justice, trauma healing, and now in full caps, unarmed civilian protection.
Yeah, I see that too in the document. That's really important.
That's important. And now you realize what this means. Unarmed civilian protection has now been discussed in public meetings at the UN, and it's now been discussed at the Vatican. So we're getting a resonance at the highest, most official levels of where things like this can be recognized, that what we used to call nonviolent intervention is a legitimate tool. Mm-hmm. And that is a game changer. That's one of the reasons that I think this might be the sixth and final wave of the recovery of gospel nonviolence.
So, Michael, I want to jump in here, and I want to tell you a little bit of their demands, and then I want to their demands or requests of the church, their ideas. Sorry, we don't want to call them demands. Gandhi said that to demand something of another is actually a form of violence. So, here's their wish list: continue developing Catholic social teachings on nonviolence, and in particular, for Pope Francis to share with the world an encyclical on nonviolence and just peace, just as he did with the environment and the Laudato Si. And integrate gospel nonviolence explicitly into the life, including the sacramental life and work of the church through all the different agencies of it, to promote nonviolent practices and strategies, including resistance, restorative justice, which is another big term to use at the Vatican, trauma healing, unarmed civilian protection, conflict transformation, and peace-building strategies, to initiate a global conversation on nonviolence within the church and with people of other faiths, and with the larger world, to respond to the monumental crises of our time with the vision and strategies of nonviolence and just peace, to no longer use or teach just war theory, and to continue advocating for the abolition of war and nuclear weapons, and to lift up the prophetic voice of the church to challenge unjust world powers and to support and defend those nonviolent activists whose work for peace and justice put their lives at risk. It's a beautiful request. And here's what I wanted to add in that I have been thinking about, Michael. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Now, I'm going to draw from Gandhi now. And Gandhi said this. He said that it's not enough if something is ancient or old to accept it as the truth. And that if something is wrong, it's wrong and you reject it. And what's right, you keep it. Let me see if I can find the exact quote in my research here. He said, "I believe I have no superstition in me. Truth is not merely true because it is ancient, nor is it necessarily to be regarded with suspicion because it is ancient. There are some fundamentals of life which may not be lightly given up because they are difficult of enforcement in one's life." So nonviolence being one of those ideas that we have to test these ideas out in our experience, basically. And so even if nonviolence is harder than violence, it's very complex, and we can still create a very robust response that includes actually doing something instead of saying, well, if we can't bomb you, we can't really help you, kind of a approach. Now, Gandhi famously reinterpreted the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita is the story of a war. And the war is, it's being justified to him. You have to fight in this war. Krishna is talking to his disciple and friend Arjuna that this battle is one that is of utmost importance. And if he can only see the bigger picture, then he would fight in this war. So people used and justified the Bhagavad Gita as a tool to justify, you know, violence against one another. And Gandhi said, even though you're saying that, I don't think that that's true. If you really read about the illumined person that comes out of the Gita, maybe, Michael, you can recite some verses from the Gita. I brought it just in case you wanted to look at it to remember. But can you think of one off the top of your head, or shall I bring one out?
The one that I would like to fall back on is in the third chapter, where he says, Arjuna says, "Why do I do these things that I know that are wrong?" And Krishna says, "You do them because of anger and lust, and that these are your immortal, inveterate enemies as long as you are on this earth." So he makes it very clear that the battle is about is the battle within.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of Dame Edith Hamilton saying in one of her poems, "I must fight till I have conquered that in me which makes me fight." When you realize that all of this mythology and symbolism and imagery is really pointed at the individual's battle against the lower drives within her or himself, then you, the necessity for war disappears.
Okay. And, so what Gandhi did that was somewhat revolutionary was that he said, this isn't a justification of war. This is a justification of an internal struggle that every human, that's existential, every human being has to go through that.
Exactly.
Now, let's turn now this back to St. Augustine, somebody who had a similar vision of Gandhi, meaning that he, through his spiritual practice and through his engagement with the world, came to a place of realizing and understanding the entire interconnection, not only of him within himself, but with everything in the universe and in life. That's sort of like the supreme vision of the religious drive that is in everybody, however we choose to use it, but that you can follow systematic effort in order to come into greater consciousness that the world is about this kind of evolution. And St. Augustine was one of those mystics who ended up having this kind of called God realization. And can you talk about, for example, the passage that you translated? What is something that he says in that? Can you draw it up from memory at all, or at least somewhat vaguely for our listeners so they know where I'm coming from here?
I think what he said was, imagine if all the tumult of the world and all the confusion going on in our mind and our body were to cease. I'm shortening it a little and paraphrasing it. He said, and we would have a glimpse of that vision that abides forever. Would that not be what we are bidden to do in Scripture? Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord.
Okay. Taking that in. That is, that. So that was illustrative of his vision, you know, of what he was experiencing. And yet this person is attributed to planting the seed of just war.
You see, I think that's really an exaggeration. I think there's been so much, there's been too much Augustine bashing. He was not the author of the idea of original sin, really. When people say that, they ignore the conclusion of an argument that he makes in Book 1, Passage 20 of the Confessions that he writes, where he says, but despite all of these things that I was conditioned with, there was inside of me this eternal flame of unity. He calls it a footprint of that most hidden unity. Vestigium secretissimae unitatis was in his mind. And people don't see that positive part, and they focus on the negative part. And it's exactly the same with war. He gives the most brilliant description of peace, that it is the ultimate enduring reality, anticipating Gandhi by all of those centuries, right in Book 19 of The City of God. And people ignore that, and they land on the place where he says, okay, there may be circumstances where not to wage a war would be more, would cause more harm than to wage one. But we have to remember, he said that because people were not yet grown up in nonviolence.
Okay.
And it's like Gandhi himself said, it's okay to return a blow for a blow if you are not courageous enough to use nonviolence.
Okay. So going from there, Michael, this is Michael Nagler and Stephanie Van Hook, Peace Paradigm Radio, talking about just war theory and just peace in this beautiful conference that just took place at the Vatican, hosted by Pax Christi International. And we are... I'm trying to draw out an idea here to add to the work that has already been done. But if we see that Gandhi took his beloved religion and one of the most important teachings in his religion, which is the renunciation of the fruit of action, and it's set in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's a story of a war, and he realizes it's a story of an internal war, and that there's the way that he also argues this is that when we have a motive in mind for fruit of some action, that goes hand in hand with violence, that we're willing to do anything to get that thing. So there can be ahimsa and nonviolence, and the renunciation of the fruit of action go hand in hand. Because if you don't want anything from anybody, and you're not trying to get something from another country, from another person that you want, and imposing your will and your power on them, you actually begin to, you know, draw back into yourself and learn some of the deeper lessons that nonviolence and ahimsa have to offer. So Gandhi did this with the Bhagavad Gita. He said, I don't care that people are interpreting it violently, but we can call this an internal war, and I can give you all the reasons why that's happening. Now, there's another scholar. Gandhi wasn't a scholar. He was something else. Ahmed Afzal, who wrote a book called Jihad Without Violence. Now, here's another term, jihad, that there's the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, said, you know, there's two different kinds of jihad, and one of them is an internal jihad, and one of them is the external jihad. So this is, again, it's war language, but he's turning inward, and he's saying that the real jihad, and this is coming straight from the Prophet of a religion, saying that it's an internal battle, again. Yeah. And so the most revolutionary and most pious within a faith see that. They see that that this religion and faith is teaching them how to go inward, not to project it outward onto people, but how to struggle within oneself for the awakening and understanding achieved by these people, these great people. Now, where is that in the social, where is that in Christianity? So I think my conclusion is that just war theory can be interpreted along the lines of the only just war is the just war that we fight within ourselves. And that instead of saying that we have to rid ourselves of this entire concept, that actually if we say that just we try to begin to teach just war as that internal struggle, that opens a huge door within Catholic teachings for nonviolence to enter. That it opens the way for Jesus's message and the saints and people who have had the same realization to come through, because you're showing them the actual path that was there, that there's an internal struggle. Michael.
Stephanie, I think that's a brilliant idea. And, you know, Augustine was not too far from that. He will say in Book 19 of City of God that the real struggle is within us. And I'll have to go back and look at some of those passages, but I think he was darn close to saying what you just said. And whether he did or not, I mean, here's Gandhi saying, you know, Gandhi actually said, if I'm wrong, and the Bhagavad Gita really tells us we should wage war on one another, I reject the Gita.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing he had the guts to say that. But regardless of what Augustine believed in 430 AD, what we need to do is not just reject the outside war, but to reinterpret it as an inside war.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for example, Augustine said, we don't want to get rid of rituals. We want to internalize them.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we have this ritual where we sacrifice the beasts of the field.
Mm-hmm.
He said, don't stop doing that for sure. But what you need to do is to sacrifice your own bestiality. That was the meaning of that outside struggle, that outside violence. And I think what you're saying is that this was the meaning of war, that what we're really trying to do with all of this war fighting is to overcome the evil in ourselves. But we sure have missed the boat. We've totally misinterpreted it.
Yeah. And what I see that it emerged from the conference document, it's a beautiful document.
Yeah.
But it focuses on the political to such an extent that I think that there could be an opening there to add something about the work of the internal work,
yeah,
of the way that nonviolence and even, you know, the, mm-hmm, that saying we want to interpret just war as the internal war, and that that's the only war that can happen in the outside world and that mm-hmm other dimension that's the same, but, you know, the political, the social, that is the world of peace. That's the world that we take. The energy, let's go back to our definition of nonviolence, the transformation, mm-hmm, and the harnessing of things like anger, fear, and greed, and selfishness, which is which are what we're working on in our internal struggle, we call it a struggle, our just war, you know, the only war where there's actual justice. And to express that through nonviolent means externally with others.
I'm beginning to see that unless we develop those nonviolent alternatives, the rejection of war will be impossible. Mm-hmm. That there are really two nonviolent alternatives. One is the inner struggle, and the other is to conduct all outer struggles through nonviolent means.
And I, you know, the UN says, you know, all war
arises from the minds of men.
Yeah, all war begins.
It begins in the minds.
In the minds of men, and one. When, as somebody who is a meditator, and I turn back to Catholicism because I was raised Catholic and I am Catholic, to find those openings of where my practice really meets the road, where my Catholic teachings become a real practice for me, not just a set of doctrines that I adhere to and I don't do this and I don't do that, but that it actually opens the way to learning about myself and saying and really doing that inner work becomes a very rich place and full of exploration. And I think that we also have the Pope's encyclical on the Laudato Si, which is on the environment. That could also be considered, in a way, a kind of an expression as well of peace building, of if we could take that energy and say the Pope really is, this is where his heart was, that it came out with this encyclical that is very timely and very important and is changing the way people are thinking about, at least Catholics are talking about the environment and schools and so forth, and churches, that they can also see that internal work, like Vandana Shiva says, get the pollution out of your mind and then we'll take the pollution out of the environment, that we can take that already established work and discussion around just war and really turn that to the internal war and then say, and how, what would that look like when we start working on this call from the Pope to address climate and to address social inequalities and the violences that lead to the destruction of this beautiful planet?
Yeah, I was actually thinking this morning in a conversation with some friends that this might be the best pope that the Catholic Church has had since the get-go. And remember, he's starting another conference pretty soon on social justice, or maybe it's ongoing, and Bernie Sanders is going to be at that. And to this conference, he wrote a long letter which included the following sentence: "The ultimate and most deeply worthy goal of human beings and of the human community is the abolition of war." I remember saying to my Japanese friends years ago when they were starting to get worried about the attacks on Article 9 of the Japanese Constitution, which was written by us, which mandates that Japan will never go to war, will never do anything beyond defending its territory, and that was under threat, and it's now almost been abolished. I said to them that if you want to keep Article 9, you must come up with alternatives. Otherwise, you cannot just put down the gun if you don't have anything instead. As Gandhi said, having thrown down the sword, I have nothing left but love to offer. Yeah, so you have to have that first.
Thank you so much, Michael Negler, my co-host here on Peace Paradigm Radio. Thank you to all of our listeners and to our mother station, KWMR. Thank you to all of the volunteers and friends and staff at the Meta Center for Nonviolence and all of our listeners. If you'd like to hear Peace Paradigm Radio in your local community, definitely try to bring that to your local stations as well, and we can help you out. Visit www.metacenter.org. And look, you can get more information about Just War and this Just Peace idea and the Pax Christi International Conference. Again, the title of the paper is An Appeal to the Catholic Church to Recommit to the Centrality of the Gospel of Nonviolence. Came out of a 3-day conference at the Vatican. Until the next time, everybody, take care of one another and goodbye.